We have come together in this place to do some metta meditation. And many of you may know I've been coming to Malaysia and Penang quite regularly for a number of years. In fact, I remember this just a bit of an anecdote here, but I remember my first visit to Penang many years ago. We actually went to the Snake Temple, which is just next door. Yeah? So this is like coming full circle for me. I remember I was just a kid and we went there and they sort of drape a snake over your shoulders and things like that to get very scared. But the snake is always a good symbol to remember. Do you know what a snake symbolizes? The most important symbol for a snake is a snake symbolizes like rebirth and regeneration because it always sloughs off its skin. So a snake is always a very powerful symbol, yeah, of renewal. It sloughs off its skin and it gets born again. Whereas in Christianity and Western traditions, a snake tends to be seen as a sign of evil. But often in Buddhism, a snake is like a protective thing, seen as a positive force because it has that promise of transformation, that promise that we can shed off our old skins, our old habits, and be reborn again. So this is something that we all come to do when we come for meditation. We all want to be reborn. We all have to shed our skins. We're going inside. We're not worrying about these externals anymore. We're not worried about what does our skin look. We're not worried about our makeup or our hairdos. We're not worried about our clothes. We're not worried about what we look like to other people. We're shedding off all of those externals, just like the snake sheds off its skin. When we're gradually, very gradually, very gently, very slowly, we're turning inwards. Turning inwards in a very deep way, in a way that will reveal a whole new world, okay? A whole new way of seeing, a whole new way of knowing. And this is a way of knowing that promises a very deep level transformation and a deep level escape from suffering, pain and anguish and all of those things. So this is like one of the promises of meditation. Now, it's easy enough to talk about these things, and I guess many of you have read sayings like that in books and so on about meditation. But if you've ever tried doing a bit, then you know, well, it's not quite so easy as that. Very often we might come and we sit meditation. Maybe we're doing breath meditation, watching the breath go in, breath go out, breath go in, breath go out. So what? In, out, yeah, okay, and just another breath. So what, you know? And that's sometimes what it feels like. Yeah? Actually, the breath is something that's very, very special. We shouldn't think of it in those terms. We shouldn't think of the breath as just being a bit of air that's being pumped in and out of our bodies. It's actually something very, very special because it's the thread of our life is hanging on this breath. It's very, very delicate and very, very precious. But sometimes it's difficult for us to see that preciousness, to see that beauty, to see that jewel that lies in breath, for example, the breath meditation. When I was a young monk and I first went to Thailand and I started practicing in the forest monasteries there, and I ordained at a place called Wat Nanachat, you know, Wat Ba Nanachat. That's in northeastern Thailand, a town called Ubon Ratchathani. And for myself, going and staying there was a very joyful, very wonderful experience, but also a very challenging experience. You're having to leave aside your culture, leaving aside your friends, leaving behind so many things that you're used to doing, and taking up a very, very simple life in the forest. Very few possessions, and it is quite austere at Wat Nanachat, or at least it, you know, certainly was in those days. We would just eat one meal a day. We spent many hours just staying in our simple huts in the forest by ourselves. So I started to sort of contemplate this and to think about what my life was going to be like and how I was going to live my life if I wanted to be a monk for the rest of my life. And I realized that if I'm going to be doing this meditation business for, you know, many hours a day, every day, day in, day out, year in, year out, for the rest of my life, I'd better start to enjoy it, yeah? Because if I didn't enjoy it, my life was going to get really dreary and very, very grim. And I didn't want to be a kind of grim, dried up old monk, okay? There's nothing worse. Well, there probably are some things that are worse, but I didn't want to become like that. So I wanted to try to find some meditation that would give me a lot of joy and happiness. And I kind of stumbled upon doing loving kindness meditation more or less by accident. I was just, one of the chants we used to do was to chant the Metta Sutta, the loving kindness discourse. Are you familiar with that? Yeah? Do you chant that in English in Penang, or do you do that in Pali, or in, do you do it at all? Sometimes chant it in Pali, yeah. So there's a very nice English version of that available, so that's a good one to chant as well. So I found when I was doing that, you know, just recollecting that, recollecting the meanings of the words as I was chanting it, that I would get this, these feelings of joy arising. Oh, that's really strange. What's going on? I had never experienced anything like that before. But it's just suddenly just doing that. Actually, you begin to realize, oh, this is not just a word. It's not just something I read about in my meditation books. Oh, yes, you're supposed to meditate and it makes you happy and you have these feelings of joy. But actually, to experience that. And that was when I began to contemplate the possibility or realize the possibility, actually, maybe I can do this, yeah? Maybe this isn't just a theory, maybe it's not just all those people, all those ones who are kind of talented and pure and have lots of baramis from past life and all those kinds of things. They're not, it's not just that they can do this meditation and make it work, maybe I can do it as well. So I started to do some practice, and I was lucky to encounter the teachings of a monk called Ajahn Maha Chatchai. And he's a Thai monk. He lives in Bangkok. And he's like a metta specialist, okay? So while, of course, there's lots of meditation teachers who will teach loving-kindness meditation, but usually it's taught as like an auxiliary. You know, they have one main meditation, might be vipassana or mindfulness of breathing or something, and then they teach a bit of metta on the side. But Ajahn Chatchai teaches that as his main meditation technique. So he does it in a lot of detail, a very refined way. And I got a lot of benefit out of practicing his method, his approach to meditation. He was very kind for me. He spent a lot of time answering all of my very silly questions, because at that time I didn't know very much about meditation or Dhamma. And I asked all kinds of silly things, and when I think back to some of the questions I asked, I get a bit embarrassed. But never mind, it didn't stop me, I kept on asking them. And because he had done so much metta practice, he was very patient and listened to all my silly questions. So that, let that be a lesson to you as well. Never be afraid of asking silly questions. Whereas I mentioned before, many, many people teaching metta will do loving kindness as like a kind of a general thing where you do some chanting and maybe spread loving kindness for a few minutes at the start of a meditation. And you do that, often people do it as just a way of uplifting the mind. And that's really the main thing, is a way of purifying, uplifting, making the mind wholesome and happy. And so that's very good, it's very useful. And but what Ajahn Chatchai does is he, as well as doing that, he teaches some meditation specifically for gaining concentration, gaining deep levels of samadhi. So because he's teaching it for a more profound goal, then he uses more refined techniques for doing that. So in a little while, I'll keep talking for another 10, 15 minutes, and then we'll do some guided meditation, okay? And when we do that, we'll experiment with this practice, okay? We'll see what it feels like, because meditation is something, it's like, it's an experiential thing. It's like kind of riding a bicycle. If you want to teach somebody, you say, well, you sit on the saddle of the bicycle and you hold the handlebars and you put your feet on the pedals and push the pedals around. And if you try to teach someone, tell somebody to do that, of course they get on the bicycle and fall off it, yeah? Because you can't teach it like that. And meditation is the same, because it's all about our inner experience. So I always think that metta meditation is especially good for people who live in kind of the modern world. We're so competitive, we're so aggressive, and there's so much tension and anger in the world. So this aspect of metta that's very, very useful is it makes your mind glad very quickly. Yeah. Whereas mindfulness of breathing tends to make your mind more peaceful early on, and then later makes you happy. And metta tends to be the other way around. It makes you happy early on, and then gradually become peaceful. So there's like a difference. They're not one's better than the other, but they're working with the mind in slightly different ways. If you can master a number of different meditations, is always very useful, because then you get a flexibility of your mind. But the Buddha said there was a number of things which are the special benefits of metta meditation. So I won't mention them all here, but I'll just mention some of them. And one of them is that you go to sleep happily, yeah, and you wake up happily and you don't have any bad dreams. So anybody who's having problems with bad dreams, and that's always something that's very good, is to especially do some metta meditation before you go to sleep, and that will should help. Another thing metta does is that the devas will look after you if you have a lot of metta, and all the ghosts and things won't bother you. Okay, so if you have any ghost problems, all right? Does anyone here have any ghost problems at the moment? You're too scared to mention, but never mind. After you've been doing some metta, then it will be okay. And the other thing is it makes your complexion very beautiful. Okay, so one for all the ladies here. You can save a lot of money on makeup if you just do some metta meditation. And that will keep the ladies happy, and especially will keep their husbands very happy, because they won't have to save a lot of money. When I was staying in Ipoh, I had some supporters there who actually had a beauty clinic. And I suggested to them that they could put up a sign in their clinic instead of getting a facial. People could do metta meditation for 20 minutes a day and then they wouldn't need to have the facial. But he didn't think that was a very good idea at all. And of course, the best benefit of metta meditation, the most important one, is Buddha said, tuvatang chittang samadhiyati. Your mind goes into samadhi, goes into concentration very quickly. Yeah, and this is one of the important things. So we don't have a lot of time, our modern world. We're rushing around doing things all day. So metta is a way that even if we do meditation for a short time, maybe only 20 minutes or half an hour, we'll still really feel the difference. As I mentioned before, sometimes with mindfulness of breathing, you might meditate for half an hour or an hour, and at the end, maybe you don't feel like any difference. Of course there is, but it's just working on a bit more subtly, whereas with metta will tend to give you that feeling of peace a bit more quickly. So, you know, even after 20 minutes, you'll think, wow, yeah, I really feel that brightness and that joy in the mind. So these are some of the reasons why I like to encourage people to do a lot of metta meditation. Okay, now we'll be practicing the Ajahn Chah Chai's system. Now here we're going to be doing metta for four people in turn. Now any of you who've read a little bit about metta would know this is quite a common scheme of these four people. It's actually found in the Visuddhimagga. And the first one is for oneself. Okay, so we start out developing metta for oneself. Second one is for a loved person. All right, so somebody who's dear to us, like our father or mother or our children or something like that, brother or sister. So what I want you to do now is to try to think of somebody who comes under that category, somebody who feels dear and close to you. Then the third one is the neutral person, okay? So this is somebody who you don't have very strong feelings for one way or the other, okay? Somebody who maybe you just meet casually down at the corner shop, or maybe an acquaintance from work or school or something like that. Maybe somebody you meet down at the Buddhist center, you know, who you kind of know them by name, but you're not really strong friends with them. It doesn't have to be completely neutral, but just somebody who you don't have very strong feelings for. Okay, so everyone can think of a neutral person. Okay, and then the third one is the disliked person. Okay, so usually this one's very easy to think of, but just one, okay? Not all of them. Just one disliked person, okay? So in each of these categories, just one, okay? Because we don't have to. What we're doing here is we're developing. These are like a paradigm or an example, okay? So we don't have to think of every loved person, every neutral person, every disliked person. Just one in each category, okay? Then when we can do that, if we can do all four, okay? Now, doing metta for all four, doing it really properly, is not an easy matter, okay? This is not something which you're going to do just in one sitting or even in a few sittings or whatever. This is something which you cultivate and try to develop over your whole life, okay? But what I'm doing here is I'm giving you an overview of the method. But if you can do it for those four, this is what we call Sima Sambheda, and that's a breaking down of the barriers. And that means you can love all beings the same way. If you can really develop metta for that fourth person, the love person, the disliked person, the same as for each of the others, that means you can develop metta for all beings. You can even develop metta for people who don't turn their mobile phones off when they come to a Dhamma talk. Believe it or not, it's possible. Difficult, but possible. Okay, so we can start doing some guided meditation now, and we'll develop metta for each of those four people in turn. But remember one thing, which is a special technique in this meditation that's different from a lot of others, is that when we develop metta for the other people, we don't send our mind out to that person to try to take our mind over there and put metta over there into that person, okay? We're keeping our mind at all times until the very end of the meditation, we keep our mind inside our body. And the reason we do this is because we're trying to develop concentration. So we want to develop like a grounded and centered consciousness. So our mind has to be centered inside our body. It has to be very solid, our consciousness. And if we start going out here and out there, and then our mind tends to get a bit scattered, a bit loose, okay? So don't worry about going over there to send metta to them. Just keep your mind right inside your body, okay?